My name is Anthony Adeshola Ademilui, aka Triple A, after my first initials, AAA. I'm a journalist, I'm a writer, I'm an aspiring movie producer. The name of my book is Destruction or Development, where I did a critique of the activities of the international donor agencies in Africa and asked the question, are they developing or destroying the continent? You know, yeah. So apart from that too, I have a website called BossTime.ng. The main essence of BossTime.ng is to empower financially content creators, you know. Yeah, we are going to launch a full service product, hopefully by next month, which hopes to empower financially content creators. That's about it. I'm a writer, I'm a journalist, I've worked in a number of newspaper houses in Nigeria.
Hey, it's Kellen, and today on Diversified Game, which is an African business podcast. You know, you hear me talk to everybody, but we love when we get to talk about Africa and all of its beauty, all of its countries, leaders, the good, the bad, and the improving. So today I have a journalist, I have a thinker, I have somebody who is into movies. Of course, he's into football. Of course, he has plans on helping his country of Nigeria and the world to be able to unite. And he wants to do that not just through movies, not just through journalism, but also having a venture capital firm in the future. Sir Anthony, our Chief Tony, whichever one he wants to be, you know, preferred to.
I'm a prince. I'm actually a prince.
Prince.
I'm a prince. Let me give you the background to it. My great-grandfather was the Oni of Ife, or the King of Ife. Ife, if you did history, African history, Ife is where the Yoruba nation came from, you know. So he was the spiritual leader of the entire Yoruba race, yeah. So I'm actually a prince.
Well, we welcome royalty always, and let's get right into it. When we have an audience that sometimes, you know, they want to hear about how can this help me or what is this product about, I want to jump right into this upcoming book and your website. You're really going after the what has been done to Africa and all of its people. Tell the people in a brief synopsis, you know, we don't give them too much because we want them to go get the book and go to the website, but what are you all about to make sure I'm not putting words in your mouth?
Okay. Basically, I'm a nationalist, I'm a Pan-Africanist, I'm a Christian, and I'll say I'm also a globalist, you know. My ideological orientation is conservative, you know. Yeah, so from that standpoint, I wrote the book to address a question that many of my contemporaries have been asking. How can we get the African continent to develop? You know, and I'm also a history buff, you know. I actually studied history at school. History was my minor course. And I did some courses on African history. And I noticed that one of the reasons why the West, why Africa is where it is today, decades after political independence, there's a Western conspiracy to keep Africa poor, unfortunately, you know. And whenever any nationalistic or patriotic African leader rises up to the challenge, the same West cuts him down, you know. I could give you some examples. Patrice Lumumba of Congo, you know. A very brilliant guy, had great ideas for Pan-Africanism, had a great vision for Congo. Unfortunately, the Belgians who colonized them assassinated him in 1961. We had Dr. Kwame Nkrumah of Ghana, who had a popular slogan, "Seek it first the political kingdom, and the rest have added on to you," you know. He was a strong proponent of Pan-Africanism, and the CIA, on 24th of February 1966, overthrew his government while he was in Vietnam on a state visit. We had Thomas Sankara, even though he was a military head of state of Burkina Faso, former upper voter, he renamed it as Burkina Faso, you know. The French, because it was against their economic interests and was promoting the local interest of Burkina Faso, formerly Upper Volta, they got his very close friend, Blaise Compaoré, to overthrow and assassinate him. And so I can go on and on, you know. Anytime any great African leader wants to rise, you know, there's always this pushback by the West, because the truth of the matter is this. Look at France as an example. France is a superpower today because of the Francophone countries. Because when they were granted independence to the Francophone countries, they had the policy of assimilation during the colonial rule, you know. And then they made the Francophone countries unfairly pay heavy reparations back to France for colonialism. As if France did them a favor, you know. It's sad that the foreign exchange of these Francophone countries, with the exception of Guinea, are domiciled in France. They have to even take permission to even access their own funds. They have to even take permission to even borrow their own money. You know, so I can go on and on. But you know, so the thing is, because I'm a Pan-Africanist, and I've lived all my life in Africa, except except some years ago when I traveled to the UK and spent some months there. You know, I've largely lived in Africa. You know, I've been asking myself, how can Africa develop? Because Africa has the potentials to develop. Africa is home to the largest natural resources in the entire world. Look at what's happening in Niger Republic. Niger has one of the largest reserves of uranium. But Niger is one of the poorest nations on earth. Look at Gabon. There was a coup that happened in Gabon today, just today. Why? A family has been in power for 56 years. You know, Omar Bongo was in power from 1967 to 2009. Then when he passed on, the son took over Ali Bongo from 2009 to just yesterday evening when the military overthrew him. Why have this family been in power for 56 years? Because the French have been profiting from the misrule of the Gabonese, you know? So the reason why I wrote my book was to challenge the hegemony of Western capitalism, you know? And I'm pleading that Africans in the diaspora should take more than a personal interest in what happens in Africa, you know? I'm a very good student of African-American history.
Let's talk about that real quick. Because okay. I think with the power of social media, we have now demystified Africa. We've taken a lot of the stereotypes that you're going to just see monkeys on the street and animals. So many people, and including, you know, I have clients, we've taken almost 100 people to Africa within a very short time. But we have to say, and my mother-in-law taught me this many moons ago, I think Queen Famenki, she said, Africa too has a responsibility in African Americans being here. And they too need to take responsibility on making them sure that if they want to go back, they make it easy. Which me, as a Sierra Leonean citizen, it's not easy for most African Americans to go back into an African country. Yeah. Sure, you're welcome. But there's no residency program outside of Sierra Leone that makes it easy. Nigeria, if you know the right person, you can get it, you know. But we also know that in Africa, if you know the right person for anything, you can almost get it. So we have to talk about that, because for the interest, many people want to go back. Do they have an easy way to get there? Do you have any or know of any programs in Nigeria alone or any ideas to help that?
Yeah, to be candid, personally, I'm not canvassing for African Americans to come back to Africa en masse. Okay, I feel that migration is a personal thing. Okay, even though yes, agreed, the transatlantic slave trade forced Africans to the diaspora, and then we have African Americans, African Brits, African Caribbeans, and so on. Okay, but the thing is, to be honest, The government, let me speak for Nigeria, where I'm domiciled and where I'm from. There's no plan really on ground in Nigeria, for instance, to integrate Africans in the diaspora. That's the truth. I mean, I'm not being brutally frank. I keep telling people that tourism is the next new oil. Tourism is the next big thing. For instance, Afrobeats is extremely big in the diaspora, you know? But guess what? 90% of the revenue from Afrobeats is being controlled by foreign interests outside Nigeria, where it comes from, you know? So what I'm just trying to say is, unfortunately, we don't have a thinking government that can say, okay, what do we do to attract African Americans that want to come back to Nigeria or Ghana or Sierra Leone, like you come from? You know, we don't have such conversation at all. That's the challenge. So if an African American wants to come back home, it has to be something that he's passionate about, that he willingly wants to do it. Because there's no strong or solid government plan on ground to ensure that he comes back home. Yeah. In answer to that question.
Okay. And that's something that I think, you know, on your side, if there were more programs, and we will see a mass exodus, I do believe, and I believe it happened in our lifetime. But, you know, the other part of it, and folks like Elijah Muhammad and, you know, the Nation of Islam, which is, you know, I know they have that in the UK since you spent time in the UK. They've always talked about if we really want to have that freedom, we need to create. I know you're a Manchester United fan, so I don't mean to offend, but we need, I think, to focus more on our local African clubs. Soccer players, football players like Etofis in Cameroon have done a lot to transform the local soccer clubs. We need to focus on that more than falling Bush and going to Europe and playing for them and keep making them rich. Are you ready to boycott your favorite team and focus on the local team to make that change happen?
Yeah, well, let me answer that question now. I'll be brutally frank with you, Kellen. Even though I'm a nationalist, okay, the government of Nigeria of African states must still be responsible. The reason why footballers play their trade abroad is not because they love to play in the snow or they love to play in winter or under the cold. It's because there's far more money to be made. And don't forget that there's a lot of poverty in Nigeria. Nigeria has the poverty index of about 113 million people living on less than $1 a day. That's huge, okay? KPMG, which you know very well, is a big brand, said that at least 41% of Nigerian youth are unemployed. I mean, so what is the implication? If I have a football talent, you know, I can't say because I'm a nationalist, I can't say because I'm a Pan-Africanist that I'll starve. I've got to go to where I'll be appreciated. I've got to go to where I'll make money. Just before I logged into your show, I was watching a show on TV, you know, on Nigerian TV, local TV, you know, whereby it's a music station, and they were saying, look, why do Nigerian artists love to do shows abroad? You know, it's because the system there is organized. You have structures, okay? You don't have such structures back home, okay? Normally, the football industry, for instance, is supposed to be developed in Nigeria. You are supposed to see private sector participation. How many clubs are viable in Nigeria? How many clubs pay salaries to the footballers as and when due in Nigeria? These are the issues. How many stadiums are safe? I mean, I'm not trying to demarket Nigeria, but currently there is an insurgency in some northern parts of the country. So it would be foolhardy for me to say, okay, I want to watch a football match when my life is not safe. How many football players in the Nigerian local leagues have insurance? And you mentioned Samuel Etofield. The reason why Samuel Etofield was able to do so much for the Cameroonian local team is because he played his trade in Europe and he made money in Europe, which he plowed back to Africa. If he didn't have the opportunity to ply his trade in Europe, he would not have had the financial muscle, you know, to be able to do things in Africa. Why is George Weah the president of Liberia today? Because at some point, he left Liberia to ply his football trade in Europe. So he made money, you know, he came back to Liberia, he wanted to be president, you know, and they told him that he didn't go to school. Because he had money, he went back to school, studied for his first degree and his master's degree in America. And so the deal is, for Africa to get on her feet, you have to take a sensible population of the Africans out of poverty, okay? And the truth of the matter is, even let's even look at the startups in Africa. Majority of the startups in Africa are dependent on foreign funding, funding that comes from outside the continent. Because how many local venture capitalists do you have that have a very high or large appetite for risk? You know, so the questions are, these are the questions that have to be solved. Poverty must be solved in Africa. Africans will be economically empowered. And I believe that you don't necessarily have to be in Africa in order to make money. If you have the opportunity as an African to make money in Canada, in Ireland, in Australia, I'm in support of it. By all means, migrate, but still have an eye for Africa. You know, what matters is we cannot all be residents in the continent, or we cannot make contributions to the continent from wherever we are. That's my submission.
Amen to that. And, you know, and if you do have to fall bush, whether it's to get school, if it's to go, you know, whatever the case may be, because we know a prophet is never respected at home. I think it's the coming back, which even here in America, we say for all the professional athletes, for all the actors, you know, not we don't see a give back, especially people getting together and pooling their money. Think if we had 50 Etofises, you know, in America, in all these states, how things would change. And like Ice Cube, I don't know if you've seen the news. He just made it to London with the big three. The NBA has been giving him a lot of wahala to create this league. And we've seen this, you know, monopolies of media. So I love that you have a book and you have a website and you're actually doing something, because, you know, the same conversations we're having are that you put on your website or in your book. They are the same ones happening at the bar every night in Nigeria, all the way to DC, but nobody is doing anything. They're just talking. So it's good that you're putting ideas out there so we can have solutions. What is your top one solution that all of us can come together with and, you know, make a change? What can we all do from where we're at?
Yeah, I think I think we are very lucky and privileged to live in the information age. We are very fortunate to live in the fourth industrial revolution, whereby access to the media has been democratized and globalization has made capital movement very easy. My solution will be, whether you're in the US or UK or Canada or Ireland, as long as you are black, you know, there's this song that says, anywhere you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African, something like that. I've forgotten who sang it, yeah. So as long as you're black, I feel that we should create a national or a global black consciousness, you know. Look at the social movement of Black Lives Matter, for example, you know. It didn't come to global renown until after the tragic and unfortunate murder of George Floyd, okay? But I think we should not wait till when unfortunate incidences like that happen for a kind of social movement of black nationhood to emerge. Because I feel that when I did history as a young boy in what you call grade school in America, we call it primary school in Nigeria, you know, I learned two things that have still stayed with me till date, even as an adult now. I learned that Egypt is actually the world cradle of civilization, you know, and Egypt is in Africa. So the question is, why isn't the world cradle of civilization a superpower today? That's food for thought. I heard that the richest man of all times was King Mansa Musa of Mali, of the famous Malian Empire, you know. And the question is, today, Mali is one of the poorest nations on earth. So how can, it's a paradox. So I think that, you know, someone like you, that you're in the media, you could galvanize, you might not be a billionaire like the NBA stars or the Rihannas of this world, but you can use your media power to say, okay, how can the billionaires maybe endow some form of scholarship for deserving bright Africans to have a better education? How can schools be built in Africa, better schools? Because you will not believe that in some parts of Nigeria, some students still school on the floor, no chairs, no tables, you know? So how can billionaires from the UK who have done well in entertainment, sports, business, you know, who have a voice in politics, in religion, and so on, how can they, you know, build schools in all across Africa? I mean, let's not look at the healthcare system, for example. It's a well-known fact that, I don't want to mention names here, but some Caucasian philanthropists, under the guise of philanthropy, you know, are surreptitiously propagating the depopulation agenda of Africa. You know what I'm saying? Instead of giving us paternal health care, you know, they give us abortion-inducing drugs, they give us contraceptives. You know, so how can, if billionaires in the West of Black descent can even focus on education and healthcare alone, I mean, it's going to have a ripple effect on the continent, and it's going to create wealth for Africans that don't have the desire to necessarily want to migrate. So the idea is, if education and health can be tackled in Africa, you know, you are going to have a new generation of Africans. Africans are naturally hardworking. That was why the whites came for us in the first place to work in their plantations and their tobacco farms in the days of slavery, you know. Yeah. So if we can tackle healthcare and education, you know, all over Africa, world-class schools are built, world-class hospitals are built, you know, and then things like IT collaborations, you know, and then if more venture capital can come into Africa. For example, I was very happy when Serena Williams, the tennis star, after she retired from tennis, she floated a venture capitalist firm. And what happened was, she invested some money in a popular media company in Nigeria called Sales Business. You know, Sales Business is doing a lot for data. Data is actually a huge problem in Nigeria, and Sales Business is doing a lot in bridging that data gap. So I was very impressed that Serena Williams was one of the investors that invested in Sales Business. You know, so if more wealthy Black entrepreneurs, sports stars, music artists, and so on can do the same like Serena Williams, Africa would be a much habitable continent.
Well, you know, that's controversial, and Serena Williams is my favorite, you know, tennis star to watch. But we'll have an audience, especially in the Black community, who says she might have did that in Nigeria, but look at who she decided to marry and how.
Yeah, after, I know.
After a generation, if that person decides of another complexion to marry that person, now the money's no longer, you know, and how we can, you know, dilute. And again, folks, I don't get into that argument because you love who you love. It's hard enough to find somebody to do life with, but we have to keep in mind that that's a real thing, because we see so many male ball players, you know, in different sports do the same thing, to the fact where I see it even in government contracting, and you're like, wow, you think you hired a Black person, but this person doesn't really identify as Black. They identify as biracial. Yes. And so we, you know, and they don't, sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't, right? Because sometimes people are fighting. So it's hard for us to put people in a box. And I don't want to be put in a box. And I don't want to be judgmental of God's creation, because I can't make a human like he has. But we just have to keep that in mind when you're creating something. Do you want your lineage to look like you? And some people do and some people don't. I do. I'll be straight up. I wanted my kids to look like me and my wife, my big king. I wanted to say, that's her. That's me. That's how I get down. But can you tell the people, especially those in the who do want to connect back to Africa, and Nigeria is a very popular person. Afrobeats and hip hop are married like this. You guys go watch Netflix. There's a great documentary on it, the Afrobeats, the backstory, and it talks about, I was there. So I'm biased. I was in Africa and in London and in America when this thing was forming. You know, there when the UK guys were trying to rap like the American guys, until people like Akala came out with the, you know, title BS, and you had, you know, the Wiz Kids and everybody, you know, popping. Yeah. So, but tell the people who want to connect back, Like, what can they do even on your website? Can they write? Is there a cost to either write and or watch? Can they get paid? Because, you know, if even if you pay them in Naira, people start getting excited. Like, if I can make a living in Africa, I'll come tomorrow.
Yeah. So my website is called bosstimes.ng, okay? It's a partnership between myself and a friend of mine who is a tech guru, who is a tech buff, okay? So we are launching a solution called Write and Earn, because we noticed that most content creators in Nigeria struggle to earn sustainably from their craft, you know? Yeah, so the idea behind Write and Earn is if you write an article and you share it widely, you know, you get paid. That's the idea, you know? You get paid. We kind of partner with MoneyTag, you know. So, you know, it's the whole, I'm not an IT person, so I can't really explain it in depth. But the whole idea is when we launch the solution next month, you know, or next week rather, you know, content creators will be able to write and earn money, you know. And it's not limited to Nigeria. Content creators from the US, from the UK, from anywhere in the world that comes to bosstimes.ng can actually earn money. You are going to see the earnings on your dashboard, for example, you know. And then what the whole idea is, I was a bit inspired by Google, by their AdSense program, you know, because why should I spend so much money online when it's not paying my bills? When I'm paying out of pocket. So when Elon Musk came up with his own program on Twitter, it was very popular in Nigeria. It trended in Nigeria. Even though I'm not really much of a Twitter user, because my account was suspended for no reason and under Jack Dorsey, and I got angry and I stopped tweeting, you know? Yeah. But I feel that my own little contribution is both times is coming up with an intervention with a solution next month in September, right at end. I'm still going to discuss it with you back end, you know, how we can create more awareness, you being a PR person and all that, yeah. So that is on the one hand, you know, is a way to empower content creators. Another way to empower Africans, even in the diaspora, yes, music has succeeded. I think the next big thing should be movies and books, you know, books and movies. Just yesterday, I had an idea, you know, like I told you in the introduction, my great-grandfather was the king of Ife when Nigeria was amalgamated, you know, and his story is hardly online, you know, and there's so many historical events that have happened in Nigeria, in Africa, that hardly documented, you know, so I got the inspiration that, okay, I'm going to write a historical, creative non-fiction about my great-grandfather, you know, and I'm very happy that in the U.S. and in the West, especially the U.S., Canada, and U.K., you have many people studying African history. You have many departments of African history, African-American studies, African studies, you know. I even have a former classmate of mine from university who is doing a doctorate degree in comparative African-American literature, you know. So I hope that when I write the book, you know, it can be sold to these, you know, departments so that the consciousness can spread. And I also hope to make it into a movie, you know, so that Black Africans in the diaspora, U.S., Canada, can watch the movie and see that, oh, wow. So this was how Nigeria was in the colonial era. You know, this was how, these were the values that we had in that time, you know. So I want to go into strictly, I'm a movie buff. I love movies a lot, but I want to focus on historical movies, you know. A lot, I have a lot of ideas, so many ideas for Pan-African continental movies that would kind of stir up a lot of knowledge about Black history. Because if we don't tell our stories, the stories are going to be told from a biased lens by the Caucasians. I was shocked. I support the Republican Party in the U.S. I'm a GOP at heart. God willing, one day I'm still going to visit America. It's one of my lifelong dreams, you know. But I was a bit disappointed that my favorite aspirant for the presidency next year in America, Ronald Santis, if I got the pronunciation correct, the governor of Florida.
Yes, our crazy governor here.
Yes, I was shocked that he doesn't want Black history to be taught in their schools in Florida. I was really disappointed, you know, and that shows that there's a market for Black history, you know, and we should begin to use the media in a positive light to create that consciousness. Look, the black people have a history before the advent of colonialism and transatlantic slave trade, okay? And then we should tell our own stories. We are the best people to tell our own stories, not the white man telling the Black stories, you know. And come to think of it, if Black culture is useless, why is it that 90% of the revenue that comes from Afrobeat is staying in the West, you know? So, I mean, it's just like what the Chinese are doing in Nigeria. There is this popular club called Adire. I don't know if you've seen it or heard about it, you know? The Chinese are controlling that Adire market in Nigeria. I mean, it's funny, but that is sort of economic neocolonialism that's happening all across the continent. You know, so I feel that there should be a pushback. And my own contribution is via my website, like I said, to recap, my website that has a write and end program. And then my going into the writing of historical books and the making of historical movies, you know. That's where I need your help for PR, for publicity, and for collaborations, you know, because to make these movies come at the cost, even write the books themselves, come at the cost, you know. So I'll need lots of, you know, crowdfunding, lots of GoFundMes or Kickstarters or grants or something to be able to make these ideas come to fruition or come to life, you know. That's where we need collaborations, you know.
So like I said, collaboration is key, and you said that, and I thank you for even considering us. But I want this too to be a teachable moment, because every week somebody is asking for that help, and what a lot of people don't understand with public relations and marketing and advertising, it's not getting any cheaper. So you have companies who are spending, you know, and this is an old thing that I saw, you know, years and years ago. People are spending $60,000 a month, you know, to become number one or get their things in everyone's face. And sometimes they make their money back, sometimes they don't. So we always have to be realistic on it. Always starts, no matter who you guys go to out there, it always starts with letting them know what your budget is so they can tell you what strategy they think will be most effective. And I am easily to tell people, hey, we don't make dreams happen. We help facilitate them. But when we do get on it, we do it, and you're going to work even harder. So I just let people know it takes money to do these things, because you're buying your way into the algorithm 8 out of 10 times. You do get those, you know, rare cases where something is just that good. But for somebody who runs big Oregon is, I'll say, big business in our community, and has a great following with those people and those organizations. It's not a free 99 thing. Let the people know what you do for a community give back that you haven't mentioned yet. And maybe it's even with the website, but maybe you haven't mentioned yet, but it's my signature question, so I got to ask it.
Okay. In Nigeria, there is a very high level of stigmatization of the mentally challenged people, the people who suffer from bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, depression, and so on. There's a lot of ignorance around this issue. So some people still see it as a spiritual attack. Some people still see it as a demonic attack, you know. Yeah. So they don't see it as a medical condition or a health condition that can be managed. Sometimes with maybe lifelong intake of medication and psychotherapy, you know. Yeah. So what I do to give back to the community is I'm a mental health awareness advocate. I've done a lot of advocacy work with men. I even used to have a full-fledged website for mental health issues where issues around mental health were being discussed. I've used the media to discuss issues of mental health. Unfortunately, the website was hacked, and somehow, pressures of day-to-day living, I never got to recover it back. You know, but I mean, as a way of giving back to the community, because it was very scary when a prominent psychiatrist and a professor of psychiatry in Nigeria said that there are about 20 million Nigerians with mental health disorders, you know. And if you take care of the population of Nigeria being about 220 million, that's virtually close to 10% of the entire population, you know. Yeah. So what I do, even though the website, like I said, was hacked, I still do a lot of community outreaches for the mentally ill. Very close to my house is a popular public psychiatric hospital, you know, popularly known as Jabba Left. You know, I go there from time to time. I talk to the patients. I show them love, give them hope, buy them food. Sometimes I help to pay for their medications and all that. You know, so that's my own little way of giving back to the community.
And that's such a great thing with the audience. I want them wanting more. So you and I, we could talk all day about this, but I want them to go to your website. I want them to get involved, especially now that you are finding a way to pay people. I think it's such a great thing to motivate people. You guys, when he says he's going to pay you, please don't think you're going to write one article and become rich. You need to be consistent. You need to not just buy on one person, but let this be, especially for the young person listening, let this be a start.
The idea is to write and share. Write, share, you know. So that's the whole idea, yeah.
Yes. So you guys have got the game, and I'm not going to give it all to you, because I think even with the website for the Buzz Times NG, I think that it's also going to become its own podcast. Tony is able to go on and give you guys stories and history that your school can't get. Why? Because that's not their job. Their job is to test you, not necessarily teach you a lot of times, especially in this country and the divided snakes of America.
Hi, everyone. Have you ever been curious about visiting Africa? Which African country were you interested in? Kenya, Nigeria, Uganda, South Africa, Ethiopia? Which country are you interested in? My good friend, Kellen Cash Coleman, came up with a course called My First Trip to Africa that'll guide you through this process. It's only $20, and in this course you'll learn about passports, visas, vaccinations that you need before you go there, as well as a budget, how much the trip is gonna cost. He also talks about what you should pack, what you should take with you, how you should travel on a budget. Did you know that $100 is worth 1,000 South African rand and over 10,000 Kenyan shillings? So imagine what you can do with $100 back home. I say back home because I'm from Sudan, I'm African, I already know how it's like. I know that, you know, when you convert Canadian and American money, it goes a long way when you're traveling across Africa. So if you're curious, if Africa is a place that you've always wanted to go, always wanted to move there, Kellen Cash is the person to ask. Check out the course, there's a little preview you can listen to before you actually purchase it. If you're interested in this course, visit www.diversifiedgame.com. Don't miss out.
Are you tired of the violence? Tired of the injustice? Police brutality, rampant discrimination, lack of gun control in this failed bias socioeconomic experiment called America? Or maybe you need a break from the relentless grind and want to regain control of your destiny, your wealth, your health, and your purpose. DiversifiedGame.com has the right course for you. Prepare for my first trip to Africa. Looking to reconnect with your roots, start a new business, or just a fresh start. Africa, aka the motherland, is waiting. Don't let the Chinese and the Mzungus have the fun and also take over the motherland. From Cairo to Mombasa, from Dakar to Cape Town, Africa has something for everyone, from business opportunities to the most amazing people, safety, leisure, and landscapes. The opportunities abound. It is time for the diaspora to reconnect with their roots. Time to reconnect with the birthplace of humanity. Africa is the last frontier. Get your head in the game and reclaim your legacy. The writing is on the wall. Babylon is falling. Give up the stress, grind, and violence inflicted on our people on this continent and prepare for a journey of restoration and joy by connecting with the land of your ancestors. Check out our new course and kick off your adventure at diversifiedgame.com.